From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Baton Rouge River Center in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. It is great to be here making our Baton Rouge debut. Later on, we'll be talking to James Carville, a proud LSU grad who will school us in the ways of the Bayou. But first, it has taken some adjustment for us NPR types to fit in down here, but we're figuring it all out. The sandwich they call a po' boy, very tasty. We call it an underprivileged youth. We're always careful to point out Fat Tuesday is only fat because it has a thyroid disorder. You can call us whatever you want as long as you call us. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter and Carl. This is Rich Sartori in beautiful New Smyrna Beach, Florida.
New Smyrna Beach, Florida?
Yes, shark bite capital of the world.
Is it really? Is that where all the sharks are?
Well, yeah, pretty much.
I mean, you know, there are restaurants that people will travel to for hundreds of miles just to get one meal. Is that how the sharks see where you live? They're like food tourists in the shark world. Oh, I'm heading to New Smyrna Beach. It'll take 2 days, but man, they taste good there.
Well, that, yeah, I mean, that could be it.
Yeah.
I mean, but we're kind of down this year. There's only been maybe five or six.
So. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Man.
Well, tourism is affected by the economy. It's true, even among sharks. Well, Rich, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, a comedian you can see October 18th and 19th during Chicago Ideas Week, Mr. Brian Babylon.
Hey, hey, how are you?
Next, a senior editor and columnist for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kerry O'Connor, is here.
Hey, Rich.
And finally, a humorist and blogger at cartalk.com, it is Tom Beaudet.
Hello, Rich.
For you.
Oh, thank you.
Rich, welcome to our show. You're going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle, standing right here, is going to recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Absolutely.
All right. Here is your first quote.
They did not like Obamacare in a box, with a fox, in a house, or with a mouse.
That was someone's original take on Dr. Seuss in a very long speech made this week by whom?
Well, that would probably be the senator from Texas, Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz, yes. Of Texas. Senator Cruz went to the Senate floor and spoke for more than 20 hours about defeating the greatest threat our nation has ever known, Obamacare. Apparently, under this sinister system, instead of your current doctor, you'll be forced to see Dr. Seuss, who is very judgy, especially as an OBGYN. He's like, oh, the places you've been. It's worse for men. He asks you to take off your pants so he can see thing one and thing two.
Oh, Lord.
Now, Mr. Cruz spoke all night arguing to defund Obamacare as a price for keeping the government open. It was an amazing overnight speaking performance. It was just like the Jerry Lewis telethon, except he wants to take away medical treatment. He's like, look at this little Timmy. With your help, we can put him in a wheelchair.
That's you know, I'd like to stick up for the other long-speaking Texan, Wendy Davis, just like, you know, the whole thing about dancing backwards in high heels, she had to do a real filibuster where you had to stay on topic and couldn't lean against your desk and couldn't take a pee break.
Well, neither could Senator Cruz. He also was under the rules that he couldn't leave the floor. So nobody knows how he managed that. That's more than 20 hours of standing in place, more or less.
It's a lot easier for a guy
who
has devices.
I know how he did it.
Well, there were a couple moments where he would just sort of suddenly stop and then just sort of smile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And take a breath and go on.
Anybody who's had an 18-month-old in the car seat knows exactly that that look.
Yeah. All right, very good. Here is your next quote.
Frankly, it's unseemly for the president to be chasing an adversary through the United Nations looking for a fist bump.
That was Suzanne Maloney of the Brookings Institution talking about President Obama's dashed hopes for a meeting with the leader of what country this week?
Iran.
Iran, yes, very good. Ever since Hassan Rouhani was elected president of Iran, people have been marveling at how friendly he is, how open to the West, how simply adorable he is. It's true. He's small. He's got that beard and that little dimpled smile. It's like Iran elected a koala. So he and Obama have been exchanging letters. We know this. We don't know what's in the letters, but we're assuming they're handwritten notes with lots of little hearts for the dotted I's.
It seems like, you know, these guys aren't going to really be friends. It's not like Obama's writing them these little handwritten notes like, hey, let's go play Xbox. No one's doing that. They're not going to play Xbox. They're not going to listen to Wu-Tang Clan or just hang out and party. Because presidents really don't really do that. They might hang out and talk small talk, but they don't really talk about, you know, missiles and real stuff.
Well, they presumably might after they get through the initial kind of, you know, nice to see you.
Nah. Nice. It's a lot of small. It's like the smallest of small talks, like weather.
How was your flight?
Yeah, how was your flight? Yeah, I hate airplane food too. And the silence.
All right, here is your last quote.
I am the one who knocks.
That's Carl channeling America's favorite fictional crystal meth cook, whose show ends its run Sunday. What is that show?
Oh, that would be Breaking Bad.
Yes, indeed, Breaking Bad. For 5 years, families across the country have been getting together on the couch and curling up together in the fetal position to watch Breaking Bad. This Sunday, we'll all tune in one last time to see what made the dad from Malcolm in the Middle go crazy.
But you know what? This was the small businesses that Mitt Romney was talking about.
The meth cooks?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like a guy who was just down on his luck, but just pulled himself in the bootstraps and ruined people's lives.
Right. It's a really complex show. If you haven't seen it, it's quite worth your time. Fans across the country are debating the meaning even of colors in the cinematography. They're talking about the links and references to classic literature. It's totally fascinating. There's even one theory out there that suggests it's just a TV show. It's also true that there's been such a shift toward dark anti-heroes in TV. It's so different from when I was a kid. I mean, if they made Brady Bunch now, Mike Brady would have a coke habit and all the six children would be by six different women, you know?
Man, that sounds like a great show.
That would be
a great show, man. Whoa.
I like the concept.
Yeah.
Carl, how did Rich do on our quiz?
Well, Rich, you had three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done, Rich.
Hey, Rich.
It's been really fun to have you. Thanks for playing, and stay out of the water.
Will do.
We want to remind everybody they can join us most weeks back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and more information, just go to WBEZ.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, it is time, of course, for you to answer some questions about the week's news. Tom, a former CEO of Trader Joe's, is trying a new kind of grocery store. Soon you'll be able to shop at a supermarket that only sells what?
This is the guy who started Trader Joe's.
Yes,
so
that's...
It only sells unseasoned nut products. nut products with nothing on them at all. Just like...
That's a crazy departure for Trader Joe's.
It would be. It's a food store, though.
It is.
That sells only...
a certain kind of food. I'll give you a hint. It's like, let's get this one. It only has a little mold on it.
Oh, old food from Trader Joe's.
Well, not necessarily from Trader Joe's, but old food, expired food.
Uh-huh.
You know, those use-by and sell-by dates in your food cartons, bags, and boxes just confuses customers. And they're really just guidelines, in the same way salmonella and E. coli are really just pretty words. So this new chain, it's called Daily Table, will sell expired goods at deep discounts, saying you should save your hard-earned money to spend on stuff you really need, like stomach pumps and antibiotics.
You know, they used to just send that food to Alaska. That's what we ate there for 25 years.
And you're fine.
Yeah, now what are they going to eat there?
According to Doug Rausch, who's the guy we were talking about, the guy who started this, Americans throw out 40% of their food unnecessarily, which is crazy. That we were able to get this fat eating only 60% of our food.
Well, so when they say that we throw out 40% of our food, but this food that they're selling is not stuff that we've bought and thrown out.
No, presumably the idea is like you have a case of green beans, and the green beans say sell by March 5th.
Oh, the American stores throw out 40%.
Yeah, and they're like, we can't sell this stuff. And it's like, we'll sell it, and, you know, everything will be, because it says March 5th.
Is that legal?
If it isn't, we just screwed it up for him big time.
Yeah. Big time.
Yeah, this is a...
But I can see there being like, because if you start eating old stuff, that's how you're getting high.
This is the story of this guy in his illegal expired food store is going to be the star of the new AMC show called Going Bad.
Yep.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Tom Beaudet, Brian Babylon, and Kerry O'Connor. And here again is your host at the Baton Rouge River Center in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. It's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Angela from Texarkana, Texas.
Texarkana? I've been through Texarkana.
Really?
Yes. Big surprise for you.
On your way to Dallas or Little Rock? Because you don't stop very much.
I was, in fact, on the way from Little Rock to Dallas, now that you mention it. But it was nice. We stopped there. We had a coffee. It was lovely.
Were you in Texas or Arkansas?
We were... There's a Texarkana, Texas, and a Texarkana, Arkansas?
There is.
We were in Texas. I'm pretty sure of it.
I live in Texarkana, Texas, but I can see Arkansas from my backyard.
Really? I hope you're keeping an eye on them over there. Well, welcome to the show, Angela. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Angela's topic?
You are not going out dressed like that, Peter.
Schools, as you know, prisons, the Amish, have long required people to follow a particular dress code, especially Amish prison schools. But this week, we read about a surprising new place that is controlling how people dress. Guess which panelist says the real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right. First, let's hear from Tom Beaudet.
Residents of Gnawbone in Brown County, Indiana's biggest problem lately is surprisingly not living in a town called Gnawbone. That comes with the territory, and so do the flea markets. Gnawbone bills itself as the flea market capital of the world, with a market for every 5 residents. And here comes the problem. There is not much else going on in Brown County, and the Gnawbone flea markets have become the single scene of last resort, with lonely hearts coming from 30 miles all around to check out not the deals spread out on the card tables, but each other. Ever since they closed the Home Depot on the east side of Bloomington, these kids have no place to meet each other, said sympathetic Mayor Christopher Rawlings. But we're not a discotheque. We're business people with a lot of crap to sell. Something had to be done. And they did it. Gnawbone flea markets now have a dress code banning tank tops, short shorts, flowy skirts, spangles, and, for good measure, yellow stretch pants with foot loops. I think they're just generally hideous, explained Rawlings. Whether it's working or not is up for debate. Love finds a way, said the mayor. And while the distractions are down for our vendors, I still see an awful lot of flirting going on around the record bins and motorcycle parts.
A dress code at the flea market in Gnawbone, Indiana. Your next story of a new dress code comes from Brian Babylon.
A growing number of coffee shops are becoming remote office spaces for people working and people pretending to work. For the price of a pumpkin spice latte, you can have 8 hours of free space with free Wi-Fi and an annoying hipster soundtrack. Tiffany Garland, owner of Jazzy Java in Bowie, Maryland, recently told the Baltimore Sun, "I had enough when somebody brought a printer and set it up on a table and then start printing out pamphlets. And then she had the nerve to ask me to help her fold them." That's when Tiffany came up with the idea to have a professional business dress code for customers who stay for more than 90 minutes. And I mean business attire, none of that Silicon Valley hoodie with a tie crap. The dress code requires men to wear dark suits, dress shoes, a shirt and tie, and gray flannel cologne. And the women must dress as Hillary Clinton. You would be amazed how that cleaned out all the bandwidth suckers from my place. The only problem is my coffee shop now looks like a home for wayward Republicans.
A coffee shop in Maryland institutes a business dress code just to keep people away. And your last story of what not to wear comes from Kiri O'Connor.
If you're planning to visit Chessington World of Adventure Animal Park in England, leave that leopard skin pillbox hat at home. You're confusing the animals, and not just with your questionable taste. Workers at the new safari ride realized that animals confronted with tourists wearing animal prints were acting puzzled. Imagine the poor wildebeest considering you in your leopard jacket and zebra skinny jeans. Are you some new weird animal? Does he run to you, run away, or just figure you're from New Jersey? Puzzling, am I right? The park has hired bouncers to police the visitors. Violators will be issued big gray onesies. Just hope that then no giant cat thinks you're a giant mouse.
Okay, here are your choices. One of these places has surprisingly instituted a dress code where you wouldn't expect one to be. Is it, from Tom Baudet, a flea market in Nawbonne, Indiana, to keep the singles crowd from getting too out of hand? From Brian Babylon, a coffee shop in Maryland that is tired of people pretending like they're at their office and makes them dress like it? Or from Kiri O'Connor, a zoo in Great Britain, which has said, please don't wear animal prints because the animals think you're animals. Which of these is the real story of a new dress code?
I think the coffee shop one sounds most likely.
Really? You're going to choose Brian's story of the coffee shop that is making people put on formal business attire if they want to do business in there?
Well, I second guess it, because usually when you say that, it's the wrong answer.
Am I that transparent? Well, I am. I was just trying to clarify your thinking here, and
they all sound like they could be possible.
All right. But one of them is true.
Yeah, I'll stick with it.
You're going to stick with Brian's story, then, of the coffee shop. To bring you the real answer, we spoke to someone involved with this real dress code.
I don't think we want to stop any trends, but the safety of our guests and the well-being of our animals are number one priority.
That was Linda Bergren. She's the supervisor of animal training at Chessington World of Adventures Resort, talking about the new ban on animal prints at their zoo.
That was my second choice.
It probably was. Well, anyway, obviously, as you have now figured it out, Kiri had the real story. However, Brian's story, very credible sounding indeed, was not true. You did not win, but you earned a point for Brian.
Thank you.
And maybe gave an idea to a lot of very frustrated coffee shop owners around the country. Thank you so much for playing.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. And now the game where those who are successful at something important try not to fail at something stupid. James Carville is a political consultant, a TV pundit, and one half of the most famous mixed marriage in the country, along with Republican consultant Mary Matlin. He is a proud graduate of LSU here in Baton Rouge. And we are pleased to have him here. James Carville, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Well, I can't well wait, wait.
Oh, yeah. So this whole Ragin' Cajun thing you've got going, not an act. You're from around here, right?
Yeah, but God, my mother's from Evolves Parish, which is famous because the sheriff once spent time in his own jail.
Did he really?
Yeah. a legendary man named Potts Didier was the sheriff, and he was sentenced to jail. He spent time in his own jail in Evolves.
I'm sure that made him unusual around here only in that he was caught.
yeah, he was caught. He probably made a mistake or two along the way, you know. And I grew up about 20, 25 miles south of here, right on the river.
Right.
Yes.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Carville, Louisiana.
You grew up in Carville, Louisiana?
I did.
Is everybody here from a town with the same name as they are?
Well, actually, what happened was is it used to be called Island, and my great-grandmother was the postmistress, and my grandfather was the postmaster. And the mail kept getting mixed up, so the post office named it Carville after him. And my daddy was the postmaster, so I come from a long line of bureaucrats.
I see. So how did you, now you came here to Baton Rouge, went to LSU?
I did. I went for about 13 years or so.
Yeah.
I loved it.
we should say that that's because you also went to the law school as well.
I did, and I had I went to the Marine Corps, I took a little break, and I had some difficulties with my grades sometimes.
Did you really? Was it so hard for you at LSU that you thought the Marine Corps would be an easier time?
Well, I had to balance, you know, the French Quarter and the Bengal and the Tiger and the Cotton Club, and there was a lot of temptations around.
Hey, Peter, I have a question. So when you came from Carville to the, I guess Baton Rouge would be the big city.
Was it
mind blowing? How did you relate to that?
I grew up like 20, 25 miles south of here. But when I came to LSU, I went to Catholic school, and then I came to LSU, and you just the visuals for a guy like me were stunning.
There you
know?
Go.
And I didn't call much. I didn't say no to much. I pretty much took the whole thing in.
Yeah, you weren't saving yourself for
No, none of that stuff. Huh?
You weren't preserving your virtue in any way.
I always joke with my children. I tell them that, you know, Daddy had a 4.0 on graduation day, and they go, "Oh, Dad, you did." And I said, "Sure, I did. It was my blood alcohol level."
So if I understand the story, you came back from the Marine Corps. You became a lawyer in Baton Rouge with your law degree.
Yeah, that's a rough definition of what I was. Yes. But I did. I went to law school and I passed.
Well, you became well known to the American public, not just because of the Clinton campaign in 1992, where you helped him get elected president,
right,
but also the movie that came out, The War Room, that kind of made you into a celebrity. Well, what was it like in those early days working with Clinton? I mean, before he became, you know, Bill Clinton as we all know him now.
I went to work, and the next thing you know, Jennifer Flowers, and then we had the draft story, and then we had this. I mean, we kind of went from one crisis to another. But then we'd go up to New Hampshire, like you're talking about Vermont. It was so cold. This is
how
a true
cold,
story.
How cold was it?
I will tell you how cold it was.
Please do.
I tell you. So the people from Arkansas were up there, and they decided that they were going to roast a pig. They love pigs in Arkansas, you know, razorbacks. And it was so cold, the fire couldn't thaw the pig. That's how cold it was.
That's pretty cold.
Yeah, that was cold. When the fire can't thaw the pig, that's
well,
how cold
I'm
it
actually,
was.
I'm curious.
I hope that wasn't a fundraiser.
It was... I was the only guy in the campaign that would say up in Arkansas.
Oh, you guys in Arkansas are Yankees to him.
Yeah.
Since 1992, you spent most of your time working as a consultant for campaigns in foreign countries.
Yes.
How can that be possible? How can a guy from Carville, Louisiana, say, working an Israeli election?
Well, I figured the secret out in Israel. We had to concentrate on a Jewish vote.
Oh, yeah, that's very important. Because I'm talking
about... You know, if you didn't do that, you wasn't going to win, huh? Actually, I did a race in Nigeria one time. I said, now, we got to get the blacks for us. You understand? We're going to target this important group here.
And that's how you earn your money.
That's it. But that kind of insight you just don't get anywhere, man.
James Carville, we are delighted to talk to you. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You're like two peas in a pod.
Okay. You famously have a mixed marriage, Democrat and Republican, hairless and haired. But it turns out there are a lot of couples who are very much alike, maybe even too alike. And we're going to ask you three questions about freakishly similar couples. Get two right, and you'll win our prize from one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their voicemail. Carl, who is James Carville playing for?
James Carville is playing for Ann Edelman of Baton Rouge.
All right.
Oh, God.
Come up through here. Come up through here. All right, first question, here we go. So if you want to find someone to date who looks like you, you have some options, such as which of these? A, body type theme nights at your local TGI Fridays, such as Ectomorph Night. B, find your facemate, a website that lets you upload a photo so it finds automatically someone who looks like you that you can then date. Or C, just attend any comic book convention.
What is the second one?
The second one is you go to findyourfacemate.com. You can upload a picture, and its algorithm finds other people who've uploaded pictures that look like you.
I'll go with two.
You're going to go with two? You're right. That's the one. Find your facemate.
That's a good sign. We're going to beat Georgia. Oh, yeah.
Very good. Very good. Okay. Next question. Donald and Nancy Featherstone are famous for having worn matching clothes every day for the last 33 years. Shirts, suits, pajamas, everything. They make them themselves. But that is not the Featherstones' only claim to fame. How else have they made their mark? A, Donald Featherstone invented the pink plastic lawn flamingo. B, Nancy Featherstone has won the Coney Island hot dog eating contest 6 times. Or C, they met when he ran her over with his Zamboni machine.
Again, I'm going with logic again. C.
You're going to go for C. Wait a minute. Logic leads you.
Well, logical. Sid went to Coney Island because it's somebody from Japan that wins it every year.
Yeah. Okay. So all right. So you're going to go for the Zamboni.
I'm going to go for the Zamboni.
No. Although that would have been awesome. He's riding along and he feels a bump and he looks back and she's frozen in the ice and he says, how beautiful. No, it was actually A, Donald Featherstone invented the pink flamingo.
Oh.
Back in 1957, in his first year out of art school. That's okay because you got one more to go. If you get this, you win. All right? This is the deciding vote. Here we go. Husband and wife Michael Roach and Christy McNally were very much in love, so when they got married in 1998, they decided to do what? A, never swallow a piece of food that hadn't been first chewed by the other. B, never be more than 15 feet from each other, ever. Or C, never speak except in unison.
B is what?
B is never be more than 15 feet from each other.
B.
You're going to go for B, never be more than 15 feet from each other?
Yes.
You're right. That's how they did it.
They were I'm pumped.
They did it. They stayed within 15 feet of each other all day, all night, every day, every night. And their marriage was very happy until they got divorced in 2010.
Wow.
So, Carl, how did James...
I got to tell you one thing.
Tell me one thing.
They didn't eat a lot of beans.
No, I didn't. Or they didn't mind.
Did they really get divorced?
They really did.
Goes why?
Why? They wanted their space, I guess. They decided to go in a different direction. I don't know. Carl, how did James Carville do in our show?
James had 2 correct answers, Peter, so he wins for Ann Edelman. Congratulations.
Well done. James Carville is a professor of political science at Tulane University. His latest book, Love and War, co-authored with his wife, Mary Matten, will be out in January. James Carville, thank you so much for being on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Thank you so much.
You say either, I say either. You say neither, and I say neither. Either, either, and either, neither. Let's call the whole thing off. Yes, you like potatoes.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Tom Baudette, Kerry O'Connor, and Brian Babylon. And here again is your host at the Baton Rouge River Center in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. In just a minute, Carl says, "Les le bon temps rhyme" in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Brian, one leading venture capitalist out in Silicon Valley says it is official, we are in another tech bubble. And he cites what as his evidence?
I need help.
Well, suddenly pocket protectors have gotten a lot sexier.
Oh, because nerds are back sexy again?
Yes, because the hot girls are hitting on the nerds.
Whoa.
This is his evidence. Sam Altman is the CEO of Looped, or one of those other stupid named companies. He says, we're probably in another tech bubble. The evidence, soaring salaries in Silicon Valley, and quote, the number of hot girls roaming bars trying to chat with any guy that looks like he might be an engineer, unquote. And we should be clear, he is talking about computer engineers. Do not go to the singles bars dressed like you're ready to drive your choo-choo.
Yeah.
Kiri, a male gorilla at the Dallas Zoo, is being sent to South Carolina for special one-on-one treatment to help him get over what?
Sexism.
You're exactly right.
Wow.
Patrick is a 430-pound Western Lowland gorilla who loves humans. He's famous among visitors there for his outgoing, gregarious personality. Unfortunately, he is horrible and sexist towards the female gorillas in his enclosure. But
I don't like that, man. I'm tired of these academics getting into monkey life and thinking they know how monkeys think.
All right, I need to say this because otherwise we would get 1,000 emails. Gorillas are not monkeys.
They're gorillas. All right. Primates, whatever.
I've made that mistake.
And you know what? This is the second time I've done that on
the
show.
All right, yeah, don't do that.
So I'm sorry. But I don't like when these smarty know-it-alls get into animals and think they know how they think, because you don't.
Well, here's the question. It's like, how would a gorilla be chivalrous? What does he do? It's like, may I throw that poop for you, my dear?
Or he just, you know, unpeels a banana with his pinky up. That's...
Yeah.
Were there any real... Would they give any real bullet points on what are the things that this gorilla was doing that was sexist?
Well, I assume that, you know, you want the gorillas to get along with the female gorillas for the, you know, for the sake of peace in the enclosure. Maybe for mating, you want to make more gorillas, right? They're endangered. And apparently he was mean to the ladies in a way that he wasn't mean to the other men.
But maybe...
Or males.
Maybe that female gorilla was telling him to go be better with his life and stop sitting around the gorilla cage laying around and making him feel like he was a loser.
Wait a minute.
And not being the full gorilla he could be. I want to do my gorilla
thing. Hear that all day long?
All that nagging?
Wait a minute. Are you saying to me that maybe he was being mean to the female gorillas because they were just getting up in his grill?
Yes, I am, Peter. Yes, I
am. There's a lot of hostility here.
Well, and didn't they replace him with a gorilla that break dances? Didn't I read that?
I did not know that. Is that true?
I think that's the second part
because
of the story.
Because everyone knows that's what lady gorillas like.
Yeah.
A break dancer.
Well, Pete's having him sit around all day, scratch himself, and watch ESPN.
Yeah.
Whoa. Somebody else might need to go to South Carolina. Little training there. Kiri, the Houston Astros set a record just this last week when how many people watched their game on TV on Sunday?
None.
Exactly right. Zero people watched the game. Just like with Woodstock, years from now, people will insist they were one of the people who were not there when the Houston Astros played the Cleveland Indians in late 2013.
It was the kindest thing I could possibly have done.
Yes, it was. It got a Nielsen rating of 0.0. A score industry analysts refer to as a goose egg or a PBS. Now,
wow, it seems like somebody would have it on just by accident, you know?
Or
you
yeah.
just
Like they were flipping through channels and they had a stroke and they were lying there paralyzed and couldn't help but watch the Astros game. That might have happened.
Or Cops was on earlier in the day and then you went out to work in the garden and just left the TV on. And
let me get this straight. You mean to tell me that someone was watching those crappy reality shows, but no one was watching the ball
game? No one was watching the ball game.
Honestly.
We're in
the
trouble.
Houston Astros is the crappiest reality show in the entire world.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Illinois. And check out our latest How to Do Everything podcast this week in honor of the finale of Breaking Bad. Mike and Ian tell you how to make meth. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, I'm Sam Forrest, and I'm from Bozeman, Montana.
Hey, Sam, how are you?
I'm great. I'm awesome.
I'm glad to hear it. And Bozeman, you must be an outdoorsman if you're living in Bozeman, right?
Yeah, I'm a Nordic skier and an ultra-marathoner.
You're an ultra-marathoner. So how's the, I mean, because I run marathons, but the ultras seem crazy to me. So how long is your longest race?
50 miles.
50 miles?
Yeah.
That's just nuts.
Of running?
Of running.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have to stop to use the restroom if I drove that.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the show, Sam. Carl Castle is now going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a winner. Ready to play?
I'm so ready.
Okay. Here is your first limerick.
I'm 46. Ear hair is blooming. You'd think waxing and plucking was looming. It's no use dropping hints. I don't even brush lint. At my age, I've given up...
grooming.
Yes! According to a new British study, the age at which men give up trying to look good is age 46. We now know. This brings to light an interesting fact. Men try to look good before age 46.
I think that's about the age that men realize that you can grow a... hair as hard as a wire out of your ear in a single day.
You know, I also heard a study where they say men stop buying clothes at like 46 to 50 years old. Like, whatever pair of pants and shirt that you have, that is it. That's it. You're not going to buy anything. So whatever the style is now, please know you're going to die like that.
Here is your next limerick.
With our consciousness, we used to tamper. Then out to the desert we'd scamper. Our square boxy van was real groovy, man. We had fun in our Volkswagen.
Camper?
Yes! The Volkswagen camper. This week, Volkswagen announced they will finally stop making the iconic Volkswagen minibus this December. They've been manufactured in Brazil all these years. People have a lot of happy memories from driving those things around, and even happier times they don't remember. Now it's going to go to heaven, where it's going to be welcomed with open arms by all the hippie angels. Here is your last limerick.
The new iPhone's screen isn't shoddy. Forgive me if I'm a bit naughty. I turn off the ringer, but not with my finger. This phone reads all parts of the...
body?
Yes, indeed, body! The big innovation of the new iPhone, the iPhone 5S, is its fancy fingerprint sensor. Turns out that sensor recognizes a lot more than your finger. People have successfully unlocked the phone with their toes, their elbows, the paw of a cat, still connected to the cat, even their eye junk, if you will. This is good to know in the event that you lose both your arms and need to call an ambulance, or if you want to get arrested while riding public transportation.
But these things have been out, what, a day and a half?
Yeah. Carl, how did Sam do in our quiz?
Sam, you had three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or answering machine.
Well done! Yay! Thank you so much for playing, Sam. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Correct answer, now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Well, Tom Beaudet and Brian Babylon are tied for first. They both have 3 points. Kiri O'Connor has 2.
Kiri?
Yes?
You are holding up the rear, so you go first. I'm sure this will not last for long. Here we go. Fill in the blank. After it was attacked by a terrorist group, the entire Westgate Mall in blank was being treated as a crime scene.
Nairobi.
Right. The last 6 people who've been missing after the blanks in Colorado were found safe and well this week.
Floods.
Right. In a surprise comeback, the Oracle Team USA won the blank on Wednesday.
America's Cup.
Yes. Residents of a Buffalo, New York neighborhood plagued by skunk odors were surprised when they discovered that blank.
That they didn't have any skunks.
No, the police were using a building nearby as a dead skunk depot.
Oh!
Bud Selig announced Thursday that he's going to retire from his job as blank after the 2014 season.
Baseball commissioner.
Right. A choreographer, a paleobotanist, and an immigration lawyer were among 24 people named this week as recipients of the blank.
MacArthur Genius Grant.
Yes, indeed. Over the past month, at least 2 drivers in Alaska relying on Apple Maps have blanked.
Fallen into rivers.
No. Driven onto the runway of the Fairbanks Airport. No one was hurt in either incident.
I've done that without Google Maps.
Apple says it was a simple error in their system. The directions were oddly specific. It's like, in 100 feet, turn right. Wait 30 seconds for TSA security van to pass. Hit the gas. Bust through the gate. Carl, how did Kiri do in our quiz?
5 correct answers, 10 more points. You now has 12 points, and Kiri has the lead.
Well done. All right. You flip the coin. Brian is elected to go next. So, fill in the blank, Brian. On Thursday, the UN Security Council reached an agreement that will dismantle blank's chemical weapons arsenal.
Syria.
Right. Jeff Daniels was among the surprise winners at the blank awards last Sunday.
Emmys.
Right. Shareholders of Smithfield Foods voted this week to approve the takeover by a company in blank.
China.
Right. The pilot of a Black Hawk helicopter on a rescue mission in Colorado was surprised when he returned to his helicopter and found a blank.
A bear.
No, a parking ticket. In a press conference Thursday, the International Olympic Committee dismissed concerns about blank hosting the next Winter Games.
Japan.
No, Russia. The U.S. Army announced this week it will no longer allow soldiers to get blanks below the elbows or knees.
Tattoos.
Right. A Florida man caused a bit of a stir when he tried to pay his water bill with blank.
Alligators.
No, crack cocaine. You know how it is. Your bill is due, you don't have any cash, but hey, here's some crack cocaine. Will that do? Daltona water officials called the police and refused to take the crack cocaine as payment. Usually it wouldn't have been a problem, but that day they didn't have anything smaller than a kilo of heroin in the cash register, so they couldn't make change. Carl, how did Brian Babylon do in our quiz?
Brian had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 11 points, but Kiri has the lead with 12.
All right. So then, how many does Tom need to win?
5 correct answers.
All right. Here we go, Tom. This is for the game. On Thursday, Iranian President Rouhani said he wants a worldwide ban on blank weapons.
Nuclear weapons.
Right. On Wednesday, the FBI released footage showing last week's attack on the blank in Washington.
The Navy Yard.
Right. U.S. Airways and American Airlines agreed to extend the deadline for their blank into 2014.
Their flight into Philadelphia.
No. It'll get there someday. Their merger. After a massive salvage effort this week, divers recovered victims from the wreckage of the blank.
Blank. Blank.
The Costa Concordia. Willie Nelson is asking his fans for their help recovering his stolen blank.
That little airtight container he keeps his smoking materials.
No.
No, the bus that he drives it in.
No.
The honeysuckle rose. The papers that he rolls it in.
Nope.
Go ahead.
His stuffed toy armadillo.
I never would have got that.
I know. The winner of last week's $400 million blank jackpot came forward anonymously this week to claim the money.
The Powerball
right,
lottery.
With shortages still a problem, this week the government of Venezuela took over a blank.
A gas station, an oil farm, that little airtight container that Willie Nelson keeps his...
A toilet paper factory. A bear walked into a bar in Alaska but turned around and left after blank.
I've heard this joke before. And they said, "We don't serve bears." And he says, "All right, I don't eat them." That's not the joke,
no.
Right? No, okay. I've really kind of blown this lightning round, but I've had a really good time.
I've enjoyed having you here. But you don't know the answer.
Bear
walks into a bar in Alaska, and he leaves when the bartender tells him to get out.
Seriously.
The bartender noticed the bear making his way in the bar. He said, "No, bear, get out. No, you can't be in here." And the bear's like, "Okay, man, look, you know."
Hey, when I lived in Alaska, the bears weren't like that.
What were they like?
They were belligerent.
Now look.
They would have sat down and demanded to be served.
Yeah.
And then beat us all at pool.
The bear left immediately without incident, but he did write a nasty review on his experience on Yelp. Did Tom do well enough to win?
Tom had 3 correct answers for 6 more points.
Oh, my
God. He now has 9 points. But with 12 points, make it Kerry O'Connor is this week's champion.
And there you go. You're
okay, Kerry.
In just a minute, a new island has appeared off the coast of Pakistan due to an earthquake. And we'll ask our panelists what will happen to it. But first, let me tell you that support for our Baton Rouge show is provided by Hotel Indigo Baton Rouge, downtown Riverfront. Booking information is at IHG.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Al Jazeera America, introducing a new TV news channel. There's more to it. Local listings at aljazeera.com/America. Progressive Insurance, helping people shop for car insurance at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. The National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership, more at houselogic.com/homeownership. And Angie's List, providing reviews of local roofers, painters, landscapers, and plumbers to keep the consumer informed. More at angieslist.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Our social media guy is Miles Samwise Dernbos. Our CFO is Nian. Our intern is Steve Pinky Tobias. Our web guru is Beth Novi. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Brown Nola Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Linwood. Linwood Danforth. Now, panel, what'll be done with the new island off Pakistan? Brian Babylon.
All right, they're going to create a new island, call it Kardashia. It's an island where you exile all the Kardashians.
Kerry O'Connor.
They're going to open a theme park of extreme Earth events, which will be great until the day the Earth swallows up the island again.
And Tom Baudet.
It'll be claimed by Japan as a piece that fell off of Fukushima 2 years ago during their earthquake.
And if any of that happens, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Brian Babylon, Kerry O'Connor, and Tom Baudet. Thanks to Renee, everybody at Visit Baton Rouge. Thanks to the staff and crew at the Baton Rouge River Center. Thanks to Latricia Houston and Barbara Clark and everybody at WRKF. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week back home in Chicago. This is NPR.